Welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, a show dedicated to the artistry and science of sports field management and celebrating the groundskeepers who create those masterpieces. The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. Spring is springing up around the country, slowly but surely, and with that, chlorophyll production is resuming in our leafy green little turf grass friends. So our show today celebrates the crop we all raise as we discuss how to rejuvenate it for the coming season.
Well, and so that always gets me asking, what's the first thing we like to get done in the spring? Well, I don't know about you, Paul, but for me as an agronomist, my first thoughts turn to fertilization. And before I fertilize, I like to know what's going on in my soil and in my plants. So we're going to start today's episode with a discussion on spring soil and tissue sampling.
That sounds great. In our Out of the Park segment, we'll talk about one of the hottest new cultural practices in the turf grass maintenance industry right now, phrase mowing. Darian Daly, the head groundskeeper for Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, will pay us a visit and tell us how he has used this relatively new practice to maintain his football facilities.
And then we'll finish it up with a little bit more talk about phrase mowing. We found some great resources to share that'll help you decide if you want to take this practice and try it on your own field.
And we'll have all of that and a baby announcement on this edition of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast. And welcome, everybody. It's been a little bit of time. We had a little bit of maternity leave, but I am Paul Zawaska, the host of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
Do you have a baby, Paul?
I'm not, but I'm joined by my talented and non-pregnant co-host and producer of the show, Teresa Beyer. Teresa?
Hello, huzzah. I can drink coffee. Not too much, but a little bit. It's nice.
She had a brief maternity leave of about 2 weeks. You'll notice we didn't put a show out there in our normal cycle. But she's back at it, cracking the whip and keeping me in line. I think she's kind of using me as her practice dummy for raising her kids. She's scolding me with timeouts, you know, making me clean my room, eat my vegetables, and telling me to say please and thank you all the time.
Somebody has to.
I'm drawing the line if you start thinking about changing my diaper, though.
Ew.
I'm not quite at that point in my life yet.
I love you, Paul. I'm not going to do that for you.
Well, for the followers of our Twitter account, for those of you who are friends with Beacon Athletics on Facebook as well, you received an announcement and a picture of Teresa's new addition. But for those of you who have yet to join our legions of fans on those social media sites, Teresa, you want to tell us a little bit about your little Valentine's baby?
We had a little girl. By we, I mean I did all the work. Larry was there cheering me on. He's a lovely, lovely husband, but that was all he could do.
He didn't faint, did he?
No, he was sitting. So we had a little girl, and her name is Darren, D-E-R-Y-N, which is actually Welsh for bird. My grandfather always called my mother, my grandmother, and me his little birds. And so we wanted to continue that tradition. And so we found the name Darren and decided to go with it. Larry liked it a lot. I picked out some other names, and this is the one he really, really liked.
So weight and length?
Oh, gosh. She was about 7 pounds, about 20 inches.
Yeah. Now, you have to explain something because I said something to you about this when it happened. She sends me this picture of this baby dressed in blue, and I said, Teresa, it's a girl. You have to dress it in pink. And your retort was?
Do you want the one that's safe for the podcast or the actual one?
You better use the safe one for the podcast.
Paul, it's 2016, and she looks cute in powder blue.
But everybody's going to think she's a boy.
Yeah, well, she's not. I promise.
Well, you'll be busy in the coming months raising your new crop of DeVito, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but the rest of us are nurturing our turf back into action as things green up from south to north. And so I'd like to turn to our geek of grass. That'd be you, Teresa, to get things started.
I'm officially a geek. Huzzah.
You were officially that years ago.
I know. Some folks can do without this next step or this next discussion, but I think it's a good thing to stop and think about every spring, and not just because it's what I do for a living. But legitimately, even as a grad student, before I was getting paid for this, this is what I always like to think about every spring. Are you going to take a soil sample this spring, or are you going to take tissue samples this spring? And so I'm going to ask you, Paul, have you thought about this yet for your fields? Are you going to take a soil sample as far as fertility is concerned this spring?
Normally, no.
No.
But right. This year I am, because my son had to do it for a school, for his schooling for Penn State Online Turf Program. He took a soil sample of one of our ball fields last fall. And fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And the test came back a little astounding. We were actually very low on phosphorus.
Surprise.
Which I was surprised.
Yeah.
So we're going to run another check as soon as the ground's thawed out here and see what's going on. And, we're probably going to have to put some down.
Yep. Well, and that's as good a reason to take one as any, you know.
But, you know, native soils, I don't think, I'm not, you have to do that every year, in my opinion.
Yep.
You know, it's not like I'm growing corn or things like that are taking a lot of nutrients out very quickly. But it's a little more stable environment than, say, mm-hmm. a sand-based field when I was with Oriole Park, we were doing it. We were taking both soil and tissue samples every year at that place. But being in the little leagues, it's more like about every 4 or 5 years.
Mm.
So
that's about right. That's about what I recommend for a soil-based field. Every 3 or 4 years. I like to think about it every spring though, just in case, because it's like you're saying, surprise, no phosphorus. And Wisconsin, what was it? 7-8 years ago now, they banned all phosphorus applications unless you had a soil sample showing that you needed it.
That's correct. Or if you're seeding or sodding, you mm-hmm. are allowed, you don't have to have a soil test in that situation. You can put down starter fertilizers, of course, but otherwise you have to have a soil test. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, and so little things like that can surprise us. And so that's why it's a good thing, even if you know you're on a soil-based field rather than a sand-based field, just to think about it. Give yourself a moment to go, did anything big change this year? Did I do anything majorly different? Did I make an application in the fall that I want to follow up on this spring to see how it went? One of my clients has tried a new product out on his field. And we kind of want to see how it's doing out there. And so we want to test the soil to see if it stuck around the way that it promised us it would do. Because it's real easy to make some of these promises because not a lot of people follow up on them. But we spent a lot of money on the product. And so we'd like to know if it's doing what they said it's doing. Because if not, we got another group of folks that are promising us something similar for a little less money. And so we'd like to know.
Sure.
Even if you're on, what I'm getting at is it's not always a foregone conclusion. In warmer climates, you might want to take a soil sample even on a soil-based field more often than in a cooler climate. You're running, especially if you're running a Bermuda grass, you're taking a lot more nutrition out of that field actively, and you want to see where that's going. You also, if you don't go dormant over the winter, so depending on whether you're growing cool or warm season grass in a warmer climate, you are going to be actively removing more nutrients throughout the entire year. In cooler climates, it's especially closer to that 3 or 4 year mark. But again, this year, not all of our grass went dormant up here. It got covered by snow, but the snow just melted and it's green.
Yeah.
It's not actively growing, but it's not actively dormant either. And so it's going to have a different spring green up cycle than it does when it goes dormant over the winter. I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Paul?
I was going to ask you, Bermuda grass, when it goes dormant, still using much nutrients during that dormancy period?
Or not really.
Pretty much, No.
The rhizomes may be actively using a little bit, but not a lot, if any. Yeah. Okay. You don't see much change. The change comes as it starts to green up. And that's the other part of this is the tissue sampling. One tissue sample a year is not going to tell you very much unless you're looking at your spring green up. And that gives you a starting point. And again, it's still just that point in time, that snapshot in time. So it's not telling you a ton,
right?
But it does give you an idea of what might be going on out there. But you made a really good point. You know, the sample you guys took in the fall showed that you were phosphorus deficient. And so you're not running out and applying a lot of phosphorus. You're taking another sample because it's very likely it's just as likely that maybe it was a bad sample.
Yeah. It kind of shocked me because, you know, phosphorus is not very mobile in soils.
Nope.
And so typically it's rare when you see a deficiency of phosphorus. So when my son got that report back, I go, that is odd. So we decided we would take another testing. Plus, it was only one of our three fields. So we'll check all three this spring and see what's going on. I mean, it's very possibly low on phosphorus, but it's just odd because it's not a mobile nutrient like phosphorus or like potassium or nitrogen.
Yeah, even somebody who's experienced in taking soil samples, who only takes soil samples for a living, can get a bad sample. Yeah. Same thing is true. It's especially true with tissue samples. You're more likely, I think, based on my experience in the field, and this is in crops and in turf, if there's going to be a mistake made in sampling, it's going to happen in tissue sampling. And that's because nutrients are so mobile in plants. Mm-hmm. And maybe you did take a good sample, but you caught the plant on a bad day or a bad hour.
So let me ask you this. Okay, so sand-based fields, tissue samples are more important on a sand-based field?
Tissue samples are, I think, just as important on every field.
Really? Okay.
Soil samples are more important on a sand-based field. Good distinction to
absolutely.
Make, Paul. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're looking at a sand-based field, I recommend no fewer than three a year for a soil sample. Tissue sampling, on the other hand, I really like to see three or more, really five or more. And that's based on the work that I've done out in crops and work I've done in turf. You see, the more data points you have, the more you see about what's going on inside of your plant because those nutrients are so mobile within the system.
Now, most people are going to say, well, I don't have that kind of budget to do all those tissue samplings and testing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take that into account, okay? Let's go to the lower ends of it, the park and recs
Absolutely.
And people like that. In that situation then, do you save tissue sampling for when you see an issue and you can't seem to figure out what's going on?
That's a great question, Paul. It's like you've done this before.
No, I just fake it. I'm really an insurance agent.
Yeah, I'd rather see tissue sampling saved for special scenarios if you don't have the budget for it. It's not super expensive, but yeah, if every dollar counts, put it in your soil. Take your soil samples because, like we were saying, that those nutrients are mobile. And if you don't have the budget to take multiple samples, you could actually hurt yourself. And so then just to finish that off, this is your decision point. Did you make any applications before the winter? Especially if you hit it before dormancy, did you actually go dormant this year? You know, did anything major change? Then let's think about taking a soil sample on your soil-based field as well as definitely let's take a look at it on your sand-based field. And tissue sampling is, are you wanting to start tissue sampling? Can you do it 3 to 5 times a year or more? Then coming out of your dormancy in the spring is an excellent time to take your first sample. It'll really give you a good start on the season as far as what you'll be able to learn.
All right. Well, thank you, old geek of grass. We appreciate that. Appreciate that little talk on soil sampling and tissue sampling and the various tests. We'll be right back right after this message. Innovation. That's what we're all about at Beacon. We spend each summer out on fields working with field maintenance equipment, and from that come ideas. Our engineer takes those ideas, develops them, perfects them, and then we test them. Not just once, but daily at our field maintenance research facility. We work out as many bugs as we can while we evaluate the product. Once perfected and the desired performance is achieved, we give it our Beacon-built stamp. That's how we've developed such revolutionary products as the Streamliner Chalker, the Sweet Spot Tamp System, the Phantom Batting Cage, the Beacon Field Weights and Tarp Cart, the Adjustable Weight Nail Drag, and the list goes on and on. We live and breathe sports field management. We walk the walk and we talk the talk. Don't you think it's time to give Beacon a look? To request a catalog, give us a call at 800-747-5985 or make a request from our website at www.beaconathletics.com, where our web store is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long.
Hi, this is Bill Deacon, head groundskeeper for the New York Mets, and you're listening to the Diamond Da Vinci Podcast.
And we're back. And for our Out of the Park interview today, covers one of the hot topics in the turf industry these days, phrase mowing. While its existence in the turf industry goes back to just before the turn of the century in Europe, and when I say turn of the century, I mean when we changed over to 2000.
I was wondering where you were going with
Some
that.
Some people think when you say turn of the century, they think way back to the 1900s. No, I'm talking about the late 1990s.
Yep.
It only recently made its way across the pond here in the U.S. Now, this cultural practice is sure to become a standard operation in the coming years as more of us sports turf managers become educated about it, and we'll see all the success stories that are coming or cropping up out there. It really is fascinating stuff, and it's actually gotten me really excited, and I don't even get a chance to professionally play around with this kind of stuff anymore. But with us today to talk about phrase mowing is the head groundskeeper of Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, Mr. Darren Daly. Welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, Darren.
Thank you very much.
So let's take care of the basic stuff first. Let's fill our listeners in, Darren, as to your history in the industry. How did you get started in turf, and how did you end up where you are?
Sure. Well, I wanted to originally be the center fielder for the Los Angeles Dodgers growing up, but when you can't run, you can't throw, and you can't hit, there's not very very likely you're going to have that opportunity. But luckily for me, our baseball coach in high school, I started working with him during my junior and senior season just to stay around baseball and whatnot. And he kind of told me that, you know, there's other ways that you can make the big leagues, you know, trainers, equipment guys, and one was groundskeeping. And just so happened that I was working on the ball fields, our local youth fields, you know, lining them off, dragging them, mowing them, things like that. And, you know, it was pretty cool. Work a half a day and spend the rest of the day out at the pool. So I thought, this is a pretty nice career. Well, I went on to college. And,
where were you working? Because I never got to that work schedule on groundskeeping.
You know, when you're 16 and 17, you figure things out really quick. when I graduated, I went to college, and I wanted to be an architect. I love to draft, but when you can't pass the math classes, I started looking for another career, and then that's when I found that, hey, you know, you can actually get a degree and a career in field management. So started working with a AAA baseball team in Nashville going through college, and while I was in college, working for Middle Tennessee State baseball team. I was an equipment manager there. So
yeah.
After graduation, just started a nomadic groundskeeping service. Went to Winston-Salem, North Carolina for 2 years for a single-A baseball team.
Warthogs?
They were actually the Winston-Salem Spirits at the time.
Oh,
so
my.
They were before the Warthogs.
Wow.
And then I went to... came back to Middle Tennessee, worked on the fields there for a couple of years, and then went to a Parks and Rec for a couple of years, and then landed in Columbus Crew, opened up Crew Soccer Stadium in 99. And then after about 4 years, the opportunity came to Cincinnati, and I've been here since 03. So longest I've ever had a job is this place, so it's kind of amazing.
So you've had experience in a lot of different venues of sports.
Yeah.
That's why I think one of the things that I've liked about it is, and I tell people when we talk to other people around the league or around the country, is, you know, I've got Parks and Rec and, you know, baseball, soccer, college. So, you know, even here we still take some of the things I learned in baseball. Mm-hmm. With a warning track around some of our fields. And then, you know, those things we learned in the Parks and Recreation Department when it comes to landscaping and controlling people so they don't tear things up. So luckily I've had a lot of experience, and so far it's been pretty good for us.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Cool.
I wish I had that spread of experience. I've been pretty much dedicated to baseball and softball all my life, but that's it. I think that makes you more well-rounded groundskeeper, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
Well, so tell us, phrase mowing, of course, is the big deal. And I remember, you know, the past couple of years at STMA, I'd have people saying to me, oh, what is phrase mowing? And I mean, even myself, I'd be saying, well, what is phrase mowing? When did you first hear about phrase mowing, or how did you learn about it?
It was we were back in Daytona at STMA, and real good friends with Alan Reed. He's the sports field manager at FC Dallas. And he and I have been friends for years, and we started talking, and he was telling me about this. At the time, it was the concept. Was some of the things that we would see in magazines, and I didn't really put much faith into it or looked into it very much. But talking to Alan, and he was just raving about this process. And he and Jared Minnick had been working together for almost a year at the time about this process on warm season grasses. And so I was like, oh, yeah, cool, you know, not thinking much about it. But after, you know, 2 years of he and I talking, and, you know, with him, I trust him tremendously as a sports field manager, and he just kept raving about how well his fields would perform, how well the footing improved. And being from a soccer background, you know, ball roll and footing for soccer,
sure,
is important, just like footing is for natural grass fields when it comes to football. Mm-hmm. And he sent me a lot of photos, and once again, it's something you should just at least look at and try. So took me about 2 years to finally get up the gumption to take it to ownership and showed it to them, and they looked at me like, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah, it's scary. You're looking just, at first.
Yeah, yeah. There were once, because when you look at it first, you're like, oh my gosh, I've made a huge mistake. But, you know, and I still remember there was a couple of people when the ownership bought off on it, there were still some people that were inside football operations were like, you know, if this don't work, you're gone. And I'm like, yeah, I do realize this. And so it was just, for me, I presented it as an option for rejuvenating a field opposed to basically resodding it.
Right.
Because we were having some issues with shearing and footing with organic buildup on one of our Bermuda fields. Mm. So I said, hey, this is going to be a lot cheaper than sodding. Let's at least try it. So 2 years ago, we did it just as an experiment on one field. And 4 weeks later, we could have played football on it. And 6 weeks later, we started training camp, and people were amazed with how our Bermuda performed. So fast forward to last year, and we wound up just purchasing the machine for us, so we're able to do more and more fields.
Oh, wow.
So last year, we did actually two of our fields. We phrase mowed, and they both came in wonderfully and never performed better than they ever have. So so every time I see Alan, I always tell him I have to buy him a drink of choice because he made me look good, but it's worked out well.
Now, you're Bermuda, correct, where you are?
Correct, yes.
Yes. And so the first time you did this, did your jaw drop, first of all, right after you finished phrase mowing? Going,
yeah.
Holy crap, I hope this works.
Oh, well, yeah. Like I said, I had seen a lot of the, you know, the YouTubes and things like that. Yeah. So I kind of knew what to expect. Mm-hmm. And talked to the guys at Purdue, and they, you know, are like, yeah, you're, as soon as you see it, you're going to, holy cow. But, you know, seeing it on a video is different than actually seeing it yourself. And
on
when
your
they,
own field.
On your own
field. Yeah, and knowing that it's your butt on the line, and all of a sudden all those spoils just start going into a trailer, and you're like, oh my gosh.
Stop!
So,
could you eat for the next week? I don't think I would have been able to eat.
That was my next question. Did you lose any sleep on this at all in the first couple of days? I'm sure
I lost sleep for the first about 4 or 5 days. We did it on a Monday, and every morning I would come in just like, all right, is it growing? And then it was one of those days I came in, and I hit a Friday, and all of a sudden you start seeing all this green haze across the field, and I'm like,
sure.
Oh, yes. Thank goodness, it's a weekend. I can relax now. So, but it is funny how people that you talk to who do this, we all say the same thing as, what have I done?
Oh, and, my gosh.
But it it's one of those things that goes against every possible thing that we're taught. Well, but it works out, and it's awesome. So,
I wouldn't say it goes against everything we're taught, because in most cases you're taught, you know, to make it look better, you got to beat the crap out of it.
Sure.
And you know, I mean, look at vertical cutting, look at aerification. There's so many things that we do to destroy it, and it always comes back better. This is just the extreme end of it. Now, conversely, 3-4 weeks down the line, did your jaw drop as to how much better it was afterwards?
Yes. We have 6 weeks between our end of OTAs, or excuse me, our OTAs and mini camps to the beginning of training camp. So, you know, 6 weeks, we really don't have that much time to have it come back in. Mm-hmm. But with this process, like I said, 4 weeks later, I was amazed with the footing, the stability. We would take one of my tests before each training camp, as I have a pair of cleats and I go out, and I'm a fairly large individual, and I just try to beat the field up to see how it is mm-hmm. going to react. And it was a lot better than wasn't puffing up or wasn't doing giving any adverse feedbacks.
Yeah.
Adverse to the fields that we saw for our training camp. So they've actually performed really, really well, and very, very pleased.
Now, what variety of Bermuda are you growing there?
We have a Patriot Bermuda that we're slowly phasing out to Latitude. So as part of this transition, excuse me, we'll phrase mow and then we'll sprigging in Latitude on top of
okay.
it. So once again, trying to do something to save money and not having to, you know, resod a whole field with Latitude.
Sure.
We've just seen that seem like the Latitude performs better in our area when opposed to the Patriot.
Will it outcompete and eventually squeeze out the Patriot?
Yeah, definitely it will. We sprigged this first year, 100 bushels an acre, and it's our Latitude is, I would say, about 40% of the field right now. So the areas that seem like are thinner, like would be down the middles and where they do their individual drills, where the Patriot was thinning out, the Latitude was filling in quicker.
Sure.
So
yeah,
I'm saying in probably a year, this time next year or the following year, we will eventually squeeze out all the Patriot. But hey, let the most vibrant grass win, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, absolutely. Yeah, you want the best one to survive where it's going to survive and give you the best footing.
Now when you did this, you know, normally when you let's say you're starting with a brand new field and you sprig it for Bermuda grass, typically you're pouring the water on that thing. And you're also really dumping a lot of N on it to really get it moving when you're sprigging a field. Is it do you do similar cultural practices once you've performed the phrase mowing to the Bermuda grass to help promote it, or are you not quite as heavy on the water, or you know what has worked for you so far?
What we've done is we don't really hit the water, throw the water to it as much, because you already have
established
its root system.
Yeah.
So basically you're just cutting as my good friend Dr. A.J. Powell at UK used to say, the verdure of the field, which is the, you know, the living plant blades and the thatch and whatnot. But
the
root system, yeah, exactly. Stolens. The root system is all there.
Yep.
I studied under A.J., yep.
Oh, so it comes in, and so we don't really hit as much water. We just kind of water it as needed.
Mm-hmm.
But also too, when it would come around for fertility, I'm still playing with it a little bit. I'm always, you know, we're putting a little more on it than maybe we should, but mm-hmm. we'll go at about a half pound every couple of weeks, every 2 weeks. But that's
about normal in the summer.
That's also kind of that deal where we're, you know, always pushing, because we have that short window of time. But it's one of the good things. We don't have to water it as much.
So what time of year do you prefer to do the phrase mowing? I mean, obviously in the summer, but do you have a preference as to which part of the summer you like to do this on your Bermuda?
Yeah, we do it two different times. Our first, we have three fields that we have here at Paul Brown, and we have one field that we actually are able to shut down during OTAs and mini camps because we have to have two perfect fields for training camp. So we'll phrase mow the one and sprig right around May when the grass is starting to green up and grow. The other one we'll do in right around Father's Day weekend, right around middle of June. And it seems like whether it's the sunlight or the heat or whatnot, if you're able to do it in the June period, it comes back in about 4 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks. When we do it in May, it takes about 6 to 7 weeks.
Yeah.
So, but we're able to have that field shut down. And like I said, it's a perfect field come training camp. So, and then the one that we do that is in June, that is one that we use for the rehab and the kickers. So if there is some small areas that just haven't filled in all the way, it's not as important to us because in 8 weeks we're dead on. So seem like to me though it's the June period is if is given optimal. The option is the best time. Yeah.
Now, can you describe for the listeners? You know, we haven't really given a really good description of what's really happening here when the phrase mower goes over, but can you talk to them about the depth that you're typically trying to go and what it is you're trying to accomplish when you do this?
Basically, it's a big rototiller with some special blades that Coro has that are universal blades. And they just look like little shark teeth that go around. And,
yeah.
It's off the top maker. And what we set it down at is about 3/8 of an inch. So what we're wanting to do is we want to go, ours is a sand-based field, but we want to go and take off the thatch. Because in Bermuda, a little bit of thatch is good, but too much is detriment to footing.
Sure.
So what we'll do is we'll take it down to right around 3/8. And we've played with different depths, but 3/8 seems to be a good number for us. And what it does, this rototiller just goes through and it takes all the living material off on the top growth, and it skims off about 3/8 of the organic matter that gets built up. And for us, later in the year, that kind of becomes that, like we call the snot layer, where it kind of gets slick, where we have to keep putting sand into it. So, but it takes a lot of that material off, and so we don't have as much organics being mixed into our sand-based field. So, but it will strip it down just like, you know, you're sodding. You would take it through, and it just looks like you've removed everything that possible that you could. So, but the rhizomes and stolons are there, and it all comes back up.
Does it get down low enough to slice those stolons a little bit to help push those things to move? Or are you just above that?
You mean the rhizomes?
It's just right above those, yeah. Yeah, it's just right above. It's not like a verticutter where it's physically cutting. It just basically it's removing everything and it shoots it up this conveyor belt. It doesn't really give you that vertical cutting. As a vertical mower would, it's more of a planer, of a horizontal. And one of the good things you'll find is we've gone across where we've sodded some areas where you go across, and if it may be just a little high, it'll skim that area off. And that's another good thing. You doing this process, if you have high or low spots, you'll see them, and it'll take the high spots out, and it'll show you the low spots. It won't even those up because they're low spots, but you can see them, and you can come back and fill those areas in. Sure. But it does a good job of any small undulations. It'll smooth them out really well for you.
So the benefits that you've seen for your situation, if you were to list them, would be?
Improved footing, which is great for football.
Right.
It makes the plant, and I've learned this from Jared Minnick talking to him, especially when it comes to Bermuda grass, is it's forcing the plant to grow vertically instead of growing horizontal. So if you have a field that's fully grown, you're going to have, the plant is going to be forced to grow up because that's where the space is. Mm-hmm. Bermuda, on the other hand, it's kind of forced to grow out. And you're playing on, you know, every year you're playing on very, I'm not going to say juvenile, but very young plants, which are more vibrant, and they're actively growing and recuperating and things of that nature. So it gets rid of the much older plant that maybe doesn't want to recover as quickly. And also, one of the thing too, the other thing I said was it kind of planes your field off. It makes it nice and smooth for you. And it, the other thing that we've seen is it gets rid a good portion of the weed seeds. You know, the seed bank that's always in all fields, whether it's crabgrass or goosegrass or poa, things like that. That is what we've seen is it starts to remove that because you're physically removing it. And the beginning of it, that was what was started was with the guys over in Holland, was to try to get rid of poa. And that's kind of how this process started, and it's done really well. We can kind of see some areas where we've had some goosegrass problems, and where we've taken it out, we have had much less of an issue than areas that we didn't do. So, so it's a couple of those three, four things there have been something that we have found that has worked well for us.
Do you do any overseeding? Have you seen any benefits when it comes to your overseeded fields?
We overseed two of them, and that's another thing we'll do. We'll just phrase mow the seeding out so we don't have to worry about chemically killing them or transitioning it.
That's nice.
Taking the phrase mower through, you're removing all the ryegrass and the Bermuda so that you don't have the competition that that, you know, the fight between cool season and warm season has.
That's great.
Now, have you, you know, obviously you've seen how it's been working on your fields. Have you been around anywhere to see done on a bluegrass field?
Well, that was part of my talk at FTMA. I was able to get with my friend Sonny Roseland out in Colorado. She works at Jeffco school district out in, I think it's just outside Denver. And I've known Sunny for numerous years, and she tried it on her fields this past year, and she was, you know, very gracious to give me some of her photos and talk to her about it. And she said the same thing. Once you see it for that first time, you're like, I've got to get my resume ready. But she did the same thing. She pulled it up, had them come out and do this process. For her, she was doing a major renovation of a facility, so she wound up seeding inside and then top dressing. And so, you know, the same thing. It leveled her field out. Hers, she said she had a little more undulations, but she could see a huge difference. But also the bluegrass was starting, you know, was doing the same thing. It was starting to come back from its root system, and she was quite pleased with it too. She saw her outcome was very similar to mine when it came to bluegrass and Bermuda grass. So you know, that's kind of encouraging for someone with cool season grasses also.
That's great. Do you know she did it in the fall or the spring?
She told me that she did it in the late spring, early summer. They had like a 2-month window that was down between activities, so she was able to get it done. I think she said it was, I think, right around 60 to 70 days between the time she did it and they started having their first event. So, you know, obviously with bluegrass, it's going to take much longer for it to recover and whatnot, but seeing how she said it played was very promising.
That's cool.
Now you said you had purchased your own coral machine in the past year or so, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
What width did you buy?
It's the 6 foot.
Six foot.
Six. I think it's like 6-7 foot. It's from Europe, so it's all in meters somehow. Not exactly the meters, but it's about 6 to 7 foot wide. It was the biggest one we could get that our tractor could handle.
Oh, okay. Now, what? Just for our listeners' sake, if I was new, you bought it new, it wasn't used, right?
Correct, yes.
So what kind of cost are you looking at for something of that size and magnitude?
You're looking at probably right around $40,000 to purchase it. It'll be depending, you know, obviously trucking's a big cost, but
sure.
You're going to be in probably the low 40s, depending on how many people are in demand for it. So
yeah. Well, and there are smaller sizes too. I know you can get them down as small as I think 4 feet in width or whatever the equivalent is in. Yes, in meters.
Well, and there are guys who are doing the as a service, which is what Sun did, right? She hired somebody to come out and do it for her?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
She had some people that were doing some work for her on her field, and they just kind of started using that same, the Coro-type machine to do it. So, but, yeah, you're right. I think there's four. When I was doing my research, I think there's four sizes, and we are the third highest size. But you're right. There's some that are, 3 or 4 foot wide and then on up. So there's one that I think is about 8 foot wide. You've got to have a big hoss of a tractor to carry it. So,
well, and that'll be the challenge now because this is very new in the industry, and a lot of people aren't going to just spring out and buy one. They're going to want to get somebody in there to do it once, and then once they see it after they've lost their sleep and they've regained it, and they see that this works, then they might be more sold on hey, we got to do this. But I think I think we are on the tip of a revolution here. Judging by what we're seeing with the results, and especially for Poa annua control and some of the other weeds that get to be a problem. I mean, first of all, you can get away with applying less herbicides and things like that, which is obviously going to be much more friendly to environment and to the people that you serve and things like that. But all the other benefits that you talk about are huge. From a cultural practice standpoint, I could see where phrase mowing is pretty rapidly be going to become just as important as aerification, in my opinion.
It could. I don't know that it's a yearly thing for everybody, but yeah,
no,
I can see in some places where it would be.
But if you're a park district or things like that, you could see putting into rotation many fields.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's the big thing, especially on a park and recreation situation. You've got to be able to have the ability to shut a field down for 4 to 6 weeks. And, right now with the pressures with soccer and lacrosse and all the sports there, I mean, it's going to be challenging for people to put a field out of play for 2 months, let's say. And, knowing that on the back end, you'll get better wear tolerance and better field, but it's got to be a commitment for an overall organization to move forward in situations like that.
Yeah, you're either looking at the cost of sodding, or you're looking at the time cost of something like this. It's
right.
The
I mean,
balance of what your facility can handle.
Yeah, right. And I got to think that from a cost standpoint, the phrase mowing would be certainly cheaper than having to have to go through a.
One would think, but it depends on how many what you're making off of the different events that you have running through those 60 to 70 days.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Cool.
Well, this has been very interesting, very exciting. Go ahead. You were going to say something, Teresa?
Well, I wanted to ask really quick, Darren, in the talk that you have from the STMA, which we're going to link to, by the way, for our listeners, you showed some spring dead spot.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's been no research on this yet, but in your anecdotal experience, what have you noticed in Bermuda grass with the spring dead spot and this practice?
Sure. It seems to me, and like I said, we've only been doing this now on this specific field for 2 years. We had a very significant outbreak of spring dead spot on this one field. The first year we did it, we phrase mowed, and this past summer we started looking. It seemed like we didn't have that much come back. And then so this upcoming spring here in the next probably couple of months, I'm, start to take pictures, kind of keep an eye on it, and just it looks like There's less. It's tough to say at this point because from mm-hmm. what I've learned about spring dead spot, it's much like summer patch when we have bluegrass. It's a soil-borne type disease. And like I said, I've reached out to some professors, and they said that they haven't really done much research, but it may be something to look into, especially since it seems like phrase mowing is becoming a little more popular. And if it's able to take care of one of the major diseases we have for Bermuda grass, that would be interesting to know. So we'll see. We'll take some pictures and report back next year.
Well, and it'll be interesting because your Patriot's older, and older Bermuda grass is more susceptible to spring dead spot, and you're putting in some latitude, and that's younger. And so it's not going to be as susceptible, but you'll know where each one is, and so you'll be able to get a better feel on that. That'll be interesting to see what you find.
I'm hoping to see how it works, so yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
I will say that I did reach out to Jared Minnick to try and get him on the show for this conversation as well, but unfortunately he was already booked up for most of this week.
Which is not important enough yet.
Yeah. Well, no, he's just a very busy man right now.
Yes.
I'm hoping to get Jared in here sometime this year to
sure.
talk some more about phrase mowing. But we went to the man with all the answers, Darren, today. And Darren, we really appreciate your time and information that you passed along to our listeners today.
No problem. Glad I could help. And like I said, look into it. It's I think it's going to be something that we'll start seeing in the States a lot more.
At Beacon Athletics, we've been helping America maintain and improve its ball field since 1948. We're innovators. We're out on our test fields every day developing products that simply do the job better, like the Streamliner Chalker and the Sweet Spot Tamp System. Everything we do for the love of the game. We're so confident in our commitment to the industry that we at Beacon have a promise. We'll provide great products and great service so there is no risk for you. When you place an order with us, we know you need your stuff, so we promise to ship all in-stock items in 24 hours. If you're not happy, neither are we. We guarantee your satisfaction. Period. We'll refund your purchase price and pay for the return shipping. If you have questions, we have answers. We actually use all of our products, so we know all the ins and outs. We are Beacon Athletics, and that's our promise to you.
Hey, this is John Turnauer, head groundskeeper for the Washington Nationals, and you're listening to Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
All right, so let's geek out again, whether you like it or not.
Jesus.
No, we're not going to spend that much time geeking out. Guys, we just want to be sure that you've got some of these resources about the phrase mowing, since it is a newer concept. I remember Mike Buchholter told me about it 2 years ago. This is going to be the new thing, T. This is going to be amazing. You're going to really like it. He's a lot like Donald Trump in some ways. Did you know that? I just realized that. Definitely has the excitement, and that's
intensity.
Awesome. But yeah, he was telling me all about it, and then you brought it up, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it. I think this is really fascinating stuff, and it's always fun, you know. I don't know if you can go back and remember when Roundup Ready started, but that started when I was in college and the whole Roundup Ready revolution, and mm-hmm. this kind of reminds me, you know, it's not going to be quite like that, but this is going to be the next interesting thing, you know, if it does what it says that it does. So,
well, I think it's a major change in cultural practices. You know, there hasn't really been, you haven't really seen many big revolutions in cultural mm-hmm. practices of turf maintenance until for a long time until this
not
has come along.
Grow covers, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Growth covers is probably the last one.
Yep. Well, and so we did our research. We went online. We looked for some different sites to tell us more about phrase mowing. First of all, it's spelled about three different ways, guys. So you can spell it phrase, phraise, or phraize. In Europe, it's called corrowing. It's easier for them to say it.
Corrowing.
Corrowing. Yep.
Yes.
I cannot say rural either. So it goes by a couple of different names. There has not been a lot of university work on this yet. So do be careful for folks that are offering this as a service, they are going to make some different claims about what this can accomplish on your field. Very little of it is backed by university research. However, that doesn't mean it's all crap. It just means take the good with the bad, pay attention to what you're being offered and what you realistically think can happen on a field. If somebody is making a lot of claims and a lot of big, bold promises, maybe look into somebody else who's offering the service before you jump in.
Or talk to some people who have had the service.
Absolutely.
Darren.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have all of these links on the Beacon Athletics website. That's beaconathletics.com/podcast. And that'll bring up this podcast, our most recent one, while you're listening to it. And then a couple of weeks from now, you can go find it by our title, the title of the podcast. So, which we haven't decided on yet because we make those up as we go along. It's kind of fun that way.
It is interesting to look at the difference in length of time to recover. You know, basically, Darren was saying that when he did them in May, it took 8 weeks for his Bermuda. But when he did them in June, it was only 4. You literally cut the time in half that you had the field out of service.
Yeah. Oh, and like you and I were talking, different Bermudas will recover at different rates. Patriot is your fast one. That thing is speedy. I haven't worked with Latitude, but from what I understand, also speedy, right up there with Patriot. Something like a 419 or some of the older Bermudas, those are going to be slower. They just are naturally a little bit slower. But they used to call, what was the one they used to call Turf Turtle? Oh, shoot. I can't remember that one.
Turf Turtle.
Yeah, it was one of the one of the older varieties. They always called it Turf Turtle. That one will be slowest.
the research that we're talking about from Iowa State shows that the bluegrass rejuvenation period is about 8 weeks after phrase mowing. But that's also with overseeding at the same time, more bluegrass into it, between 5 and 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet.
And with and a grow cover.
And using a grow cover. Now, the grow cover, if I recall reading the research, that 8 weeks, the growth cover was before that 8 weeks, correct?
Correct. So they put the growth covers on, and then they didn't start looking at the amount of regrowth until after they removed the growth covers. This is through GCM Magazine, part of the GCSAA. This was done by grad student at the time, Kevin Hansen, and Dr. Nick Christians out of Iowa State. And so they take a good look at what cultural practices are going to give you the best reestablishment after 26 days. So they phrase mowed, put the growth covers on, or didn't for the control. And then 26 days after the phrase mowing, they removed the growth covers and then monitored the amount of regrowth for the next 11 weeks. And really, what if you scroll down into the page, down to figure one, which is the graph, which is a little easier to read, you can see that everything caught up to itself at about 3 weeks, 4 weeks after the growth covers were removed. And they got up to about 50 or 60% turf cover at that 3 to 4 week mark, except where they used 10 pounds of Kentucky bluegrass interseeded back in with the growth cover. That one hit 60 to 70% turf grass cover at the moment they took the growth cover off. But it still took it another few more weeks as we get out to week 5 and 6 to hit 90% turf cover. So it is a longer reestablishment time, but you're looking at total coverage versus tolerable coverage would be the way that I would say that.
That's absolutely correct. But again, you're also looking at not having to have to take out your entire field.
Yeah.
And strengthening what field you have left in there after the phrase mowing, getting rid of weed seed. You know, that's, to me, that's the most amazing thing of this whole phrase mowing, is getting rid of the weed seed and the thatch layer, which of course can incubate a lot of nasty things. You know, I think just from the health of the turf standpoint and the health of the medium that it's growing in, there's such a benefit there.
Yep, absolutely. And I'd be curious to know for the guys that are in the transition zone, this might be the only really good way to remove Bermuda grass from bluegrass.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because chemically is a hit or miss type of thing.
Yeah, barely works.
Especially with the stronger ryegrasses these days. So.
Well, and that's the ryegrass. I'm talking Bermuda grass out of bluegrass. If you've got a bluegrass field and you've got Bermuda that's eking into it, this might be one of the best ways to get rid of that.
That's a good point.
You know, we always said, well, you can round up it. And, you know, that's just not very... It's not going to get you the kind of recovery that you're looking at from this particular practice. There's actually some really interesting science, I bet, going on here, and I'm looking forward to seeing the university start taking up some more of this work as far as what it is sparking to happen within the plant, as far as is it encouraging root growth? Is it encouraging a different type of regrowth from the top as well as from the bottom, from the root side of things? And as somebody who plays a lot with hormones in plants, I think that this is going to be really fascinating. So we have the GCM article for you. We've got another article that goes into the background written by Jared Minnick and Alan Reed, both guys that Darren was talking about, and that's in field science. That's through the msu.edu site, and we'll have that listed for you. We also will have Darren Daly's talk posted. It doesn't give a lot of the notes, but we covered a lot of what he will provide you pictures of in his talk from the STMA program this year. So that's posted on the STMA site. We'll have that for you. And then we also have a really nice article that Paul found on the Covermaster site, written by your favorite and ours, Mr. Ross Kirkab.
Our gridiron guru.
And he does a really nice breakdown on this, as well as talking about some other practices that you might consider if you're interested in this, but not quite ready to pull the trigger on something that's so drastic. So,
all right. Well, I think that pretty much puts a show in the books. A nice, healthy spring show about getting our grass ready to go. And Teresa, what do you think?
Well, I think that you don't want to miss a minute of our next show either, because we're going to be talking about some fascinating stuff as per the usual.
As soon as we think it up.
That's right. The baby's eating my brain. There are lots of places where you can find our podcast on the web. Obviously, you've already found it. But if you're looking for some other avenues to try, there's our main page at beaconathletics.com/podcast. You can also download our show through Apple iTunes or through our partners at baseballtalkradio.com. They're the same as the guys at baseballpodcast.net. You've got us there and a lot of other baseball junkie type podcasts. No matter who your team, they've got a podcast for you. So you can check them out, check us out there. A lot of good shows for you to find.
We'd love to hear from you. You can email Teresa and I at podcast@beaconathletics.com, where you can send us your questions or comments on our show, good or bad. If you have show ideas, you can also send them along, because like I said, we're just kind of making it up as we go along. Hey.
If you're on Twitter, you can follow us at Diamond Da Vinci's, and that's at Diamond DAVINCIS. Not crazy active there, but we do share some things, as long as the occasional baby picture as well. You get one every 2 years.
Well, yeah, that's right.
That might be our last one.
The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. And with that, adios.
See you next time.